on today's Run to the Top podcast.
Running is not an easy activity. It takes time and effort and sweat, and you can't keep at it unless you have trained your brain with enough motivational techniques to keep going. So train your brain first, and the rest of your body will follow.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. Today, we're talking with Boston Marathon winner Amby Burfoot. 2018 marks the 50th anniversary of Amby Burfoot's 1968 win at the Boston Marathon. Burfoot is returning to run Boston in just a few days. Having logged over 100,000 miles in his lifetime and leading the national magazine Runner's World as editor-in-chief for 20 years, Burfoot is the expert's expert. With as much expertise as he has accumulated, he still maintains that running is a simple sport and deserves a simple book. In Run Forever, his recently released book, Burfoot shares practical advice about the fundamentals of running and how to run with greater joy and enhanced health. By following approachable guidelines, you'll learn how to motivate yourself, center your mind, adapt techniques to increase your endurance, and live every day healthy, active, and engaged. Run Forever will lead you to becoming a faster, healthier runner without injuries or burnout. We'll talk with Amby about what it feels like to win Boston, what it will be like to run the course 50 years later, and we will discuss highlights from Run Forever, his new book. We'll also be giving away 3 free books. Details for this giveaway will come later in the podcast. First, let's hear from our sponsors. Let's talk about Spartan. With over 60 races all around the country, finding one to commit to shouldn't be too hard, as long as you leave your excuses behind. Spartan is an obstacle course racing company with races for every athletic ability and skill level, starting with the 3-plus mile, 20-plus obstacle sprint, all the way to the 12-plus mile, 30-plus obstacle beast. Every racer can find what's right for them. You work hard. You push yourself through the weekday grind with grit, discipline, and determination. Bring that same grit and determination to a Spartan race near you. Let it propel you through hills, climbs, and carries. Will it be easy? No. Will it be worth it? Absolutely. Sign up for the best weekend meeting of your life and race alongside a community of 50 million. Running is the most underrated Spartan obstacle, and Spartan believes if you can run, you can race. Find your Spartan race today. Visit runnersconnect.net/Spartan for an exclusive offer. Find a race near you and view training and nutrition tips. Welcome back to today's podcast and our guest, Amby Burfoot, Boston Marathon champion. Amby won the Boston Marathon in 1968 in a time of 2:22:17, with his best marathon time ever of 2:14:28, coming in that same year in Fukuoka, Japan. Burfoot began working for Bob Anderson at Runner's World in 1978 and became editor-in-chief in 1985. He held the position for 20 years before retiring in 2013. Amby has run well over 100,000 miles in his lifetime and keeps adding to it on a daily basis and claims the U.S.'s longest active race road streak, having completed the Thanksgiving Day 5-mile run in Manchester, Connecticut, 54 years in a row. Currently a writer-at-large for Runner's World, he has been honored by numerous running organizations both as an athlete and a writer. He continues running up to 30 miles a week. That's very impressive. Welcome, Amby.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Stephanie. I'm very much looking forward to our conversation.
Me too. It's relief. It's so great for me to learn about these different runners and all of the things that are involved in running. So I'm looking forward to our talk as well. I have 4 basic questions for all of our guests, and here they are for the beginning of this. How old are you now? Where were you born? Where are you living now? And since we're a running podcast, what is your favorite race distance or type of race?
Sure. I am now 71 years old and more than halfway onto 72. I was actually born in Virginia, in Charlottesville, Virginia, at the University of Virginia Hospital there. I was born on a somewhat historic or ironic or something date. I was born the exact same day and year as President Bill Clinton.
Wow.
So I am kind of an uber boomer, or sometimes I refer to myself as that. I am now living very, very happily in Mystic, Connecticut, which is not the New York City, Fairfield County end of Connecticut, but the Rhode Island end of Connecticut.
Oh.
On Long Island Sound. It's a very beautiful place to live. It's very, very close to where I grew up. In fact, I grew up just 3 or 4 miles from here.
Hmm.
And one result of that, a little bit humorous, is that I am running the same daily road race training routes that I ran 50 years ago when I was a bit younger and a bit faster.
Wow.
So I run those same courses now, and it takes me 40% longer than it used to run the same distance.
I know about that for sure. So that's
for sure.
Favorite distance for a race?
I would hate to pick. I like the two big popular distances now. I like both the 5K during the summer when it's hot and humid and I don't want to run longer races. I find the Shoreline 5Ks that we have here wonderful. And then I like testing myself once or twice a year in the half marathon to see what I can do at a at a real distance.
I like the half marathon. I think it's one of those distances that it's a challenge to train for. You have to apply yourself. Not that a 5K isn't, but it's a different amount of time commitment. And then to also be able to, try and go fast for 13.1 miles is a challenge for sure.
Well, I feel the same. And for me, in particular, the half marathon forces me to have a kind of a mental focus to my training for a couple of months, say, and I get a little bit more determined and I put a little bit more effort into my training. And then when race day comes, I try to focus in the way that I used to focus when I was racing and keep going hard for a couple of hours and see where I come out.
Yeah, that's a really good feeling. And you've run enough races that I'm sure some days go quite well and other days don't go quite as well. And it's all in the luck of the day.
What's most strange to me now is that if I run a 10K now, I have to pace it the way I used to pace a marathon. You know, you cut it down into little manageable chunks and you don't think of the whole distance because 10K is too much for my mind to hold on to.
That
so
is
I have
so
to run
interesting.
A mile at a time until I get there.
Well, moving on here, you started running in high school, I think. That's kind of what I've gleaned from reading your background. And you had a famous coach. Would you elaborate on this a bit?
Yes. And this is, I told you earlier that I could talk in short sound bites, not so much about my high school coach, John J. Kelly. But first, I'll note that I grew up the son of a YMCA director.
Oh.
And when I was young, I played all the traditional American sports. I had the obsessive personality even then. I didn't realize what it was then, but I could practice. So I was skilled at basketball and baseball and sports like that.
And you're tall too, right? I mean, how tall are you?
I am 6 feet tall. People think I'm taller because I'm pretty thin, but I'm just 6 feet.
Yeah.
But I practiced those sports very hard and I grew very skilled at them. And I thought I was going to become a famous basketball or baseball player. And it was not until I got to high school where I realized that in those sports, you need to be strong, fast, and powerful, as well as skilled. And those were not things that I had. So I made the switch basically from basketball, where I was the worst player on the team, to trying cross country. And I had real success at cross country. And I had the dream good luck that when I joined the cross country team here at Groton, in Groton, Connecticut, at Fitch High School, the high school cross country coach was John J. Kelly, who had won the 1957 Boston Marathon, been in two Olympics for the U.S. in the marathon, won 8 consecutive national marathon championships. And that was the least of his characteristics. He was the most brilliant, forward-thinking Renaissance man I have ever met in my life. Just a couple of examples. In the 1950s, when no one else had ever heard of things like organic gardening, he was an organic gardener. He was a vegetarian. He rode his bicycle to work at the high school rather than driving a polluting car to work, and on and on and on. He was a literature scholar. He was an Irish storyteller. All of us who knew him were mesmerized by him, despite the fact that he was this extraordinarily humble 5'5" little guy who never talked about his own running or how we should run, but he talked about the world and educated us in a world that was much larger than we knew about in our little town. And so I just, he had an effect on my life that cannot even be summarized in whole, but it was galvanizing.
Now, is he still alive?
He is not. He died, now it's getting up close to a decade or so ago. We have a statue of him. We have a running statue of him in Mystic, Connecticut, which is worth visiting. It is right next to the somewhat famous Mystic Pizza House. There was a movie called Mystic Pizza 30 years ago. And his statue includes his dog running with him, because everyone in town saw him with the dog all the time. So it's really, usually you see athletic statues and you think that they aren't good representations of the person. This one is pretty good because it's energetic and it has the dog, and it is in a small commanding parklet in Mystic. So people
We can come and see the statue. We can go for a run from there, and then we can stop at Mystic Pizza and enjoy a pizza afterward, right?
You can get it all just within a few blocks. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, I am moving ahead here because you have a long career both in running and in being involved in running as a business. You worked for Runner's World for 20 years as the editor-in-chief. Is that correct?
Yes, I was editor-in-chief for about 20 years. I don't remember now if it was 18 or 22, but it was, of course, the dream job. I feel that I am one of the few people I know who kind of ended up working in the job that he was somehow sort of destined to be in. I still pinch myself when I think about the joy of working for Runner's World. Yes, it was a corporation. Yes, we tried to make money. Yes, I was a manager and had to do performance reviews of all my employees and things like that. And yet it was still a dream job because it was Runner's World and I had the best boss in the world. And I was surrounded by people who worked at Runner's World who loved the sport as much as I did.
So how did you manage your running when you were working that hard at Runner's World? I know, you know, that can often be one of those things where you love something so much, you start doing it as a job, and then you find that you don't have time to do the thing that you really love that got you into that job in the first place.
Well, of course, at Runner's World, we did have time to do the running that we loved to do. And we were, you know, nobody looked twice if you snuck out for an hour long run at lunchtime. And then we had, a very healthy cafeteria. We had showers in the building because Rodale, the owner, Rodale Inc., was then one of the most forward-thinking companies in the country. So that's another reason it was a dream place to work. But the truth is more what you hinted at in your question. Once the editorial side of my life became clearly the most important part. Then the running took a secondary stage to the editorial work and the magazine management work. So yes, I probably ran 25 to 35 miles a week through all my years at Runner's World, but it wasn't focused running. It wasn't running to compete. It wasn't running to be fast. It was just running to stay fit and to continue to enjoy the sport. And in my later years at Runner's World, when I went back to being more of a writer than the head editor, I actually went back to training more focused, and from about 55 to 62 or so, I got faster for 6 or 7 years in a row because I was back to concentrating on my running again. And that was a lot of fun.
That is a lot of fun. And it's a great age to be pushing yourself. And I'm sure that you knew who the competitors were. And, you know, if you can improve over those competitors, even if you're not placing as well or placing better, whatever, it's a great feeling.
Well, the wonderful thing was, as you know, that in this country, with all the great runners in every community and the great age group runners in every community, even though I was theoretically a bit of a stud, there was a university professor who lived 5 miles from me who was 6 months older than I was and faster than I was.
So I
had someone faster to train with for 3 or 4 years. And at that point, I actually did catch up to him for a few years. And we were the most compatible training partners. We were the friendliest racing competitors. We were on the same Masters racing team. It was one of the better times of my life in terms of the running and the teamsmanship that I enjoyed.
So nice. I actually want to go back to 1968 when you ran the Boston Marathon, because when you won the Boston Marathon, because that was a different time in so many ways. And could you just give us a little bit of both what led you to run the Boston Marathon, what your chances were of winning it that day, and then how you strategized for it and came out at the top?
Do we have all day? No, that's all right. Yes, first of all, 1968 was an Olympic year, and if people follow the Olympics, they know that the top runners in the U.S. In the Olympic year, they save everything for the Olympic trials race because they have to run that before they can go to the Olympics. That was not the way I looked at 1968 because I was a New Englander, because I lived close to Boston, because John Kelly had been a Boston Marathon winner. I wanted to win the Boston Marathon, to run it and to try to win it, even in an Olympic trials year when theoretically I should have been resting for later in the year when the trials were held in mid-August.
Gotcha.
So I trained my butt off for Boston. I had a month before, I had actually had a couple of back-to-back 175-mile training weeks.
Wow.
On a brief vacation from college. I had been running close to 120 miles a week for 2 years at college at Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut, where Jeff Galloway was a teammate for a couple of years and then Bill Rogers for a couple of years. And I put everything into my focus for the Boston Marathon. I hit the race week in for the only time of my life, this perfect flow, as you read about in the books. Mm-hmm. Everything was coming easily. Every run felt easy, yet it was fast. I felt tremendous in the race. I ran with the leaders for the first half of the race, and I felt like I was jogging. Second half, I made a little move, and I thought I might drop one or two of the 12 of us in the pack. And instead, everybody dropped away except for one other person.
Oh, my gosh.
So then it was two-man dogfight going up the hills.
Yeah.
I was desperate to get away on the hills because I knew the runner who was tailing me, and he knew me, and we both knew that he was a faster finisher than I was. I had terrible kick, and he was a good track runner. Mm. I killed myself to the top of Heartbreak Hill, couldn't drop him. I just about collapsed and dropped out in despair when he was still there at the top of Heartbreak Hill. But then, as Boston marathoners know, the downhills are worse than the uphills.
Totally.
And he cramped up on the downhills. And I was staggering. I had run myself out going up the hills, but I didn't cramp going down the hills.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So I staggered the last 5 miles and got in about 20 seconds ahead of him and just absolutely totally collapsed into the arms of the infamous Jock Semple at the finish line. And I was 21 years old. You know, it was almost like achieving your dream a little bit too early in life, but it was for sure one of the great days of my life.
Wow. Well, that's a wonderful story. And I've met Meb Keflezighi, who of course won the Boston Marathon not too long ago. And he was talking about that kind of strategy like you're saying, where you know where your strengths are and where you try to psych out the competition around you. And in his case, he ran around a corner, I guess, and, you know, and sprinted for a little while right at the very, very end, and was able to psych out the competition and finished. But he said, like you, that, you know, it was just everything was gone by the end. So congratulations on that. What a day.
Well, as I said, it's almost as if it came too early.
Gotcha.
And I have to turn a little bit of it into a joke because it was so long ago. I often kid that I've been slowing down for more years than practically anyone else I know. That was 50 years ago. And believe me, I've been getting slower every day since. It's not as if I didn't go back to Boston in great shape on some other years, but you don't always have the perfect day that you need to have to win the Boston Marathon. You don't win Boston on a bad day. You've got to have a good day. And I'm certainly very thankful that I had at least one good day at Boston.
Yeah. Well, I also appreciate that you stick with it and keep going back, and you've got quite the running history. I'm moving ahead now to 1984, when you were working for Runner's World and covered the first Olympic marathon that women were allowed to participate in, when Joan Pinoit Samuelson came into the Olympic Stadium ahead of the field and won gold. What was this like for you as an American, as a media rep, and as a man watching a woman perform so well for the first time in the Olympics in that event?
Well, I don't know if a man is allowed to say this, Stephanie, but I was in the stands and I was crying.
Wow.
And I'm almost tearing up right now talking to you and thinking back to that moment, because it was, as you would remember, it was so monumental.
Indeed.
And we had all, the women pioneers who I've written about in a previous book, they had a tough, tough battle getting to the Olympics. But it wasn't because they had to overcome people like me or my friends who were running or any of the runners. The runners were always in favor of having women participate in racing and always supported the Catherine Switzers and Bobby Gibbs and Nina Kusicks, and the list goes on and on. And of course, when a tiny little titan comes out of the state of Maine and starts winning road races with a sort of a tremendous strength and endurance and dedication to the sport, we were all in Joni's corner. We were all rooting for her, even as we knew that Greta Weitz and Ingrid Christensen and Rosa Moda and other athletes from around the world were there to compete against her in Los Angeles. But the way she broke away so early after 5 kilometers and ran so courageously and so strongly at the front of that race for the last 23 miles, it was impossible not to feel emotional when she came into the stadium. And I was in a very big press section. And of course, the press are all supposed to be hardened and not emotional. But I definitely had damp eyes, and I was not alone.
I would highly recommend to our listeners that they look up her name, Joan Benoit Samuelson, for the YouTube videos that are out there of her finishing that marathon. And I have this vision of her with this baseball cap on. That's one of the things. And also, as you said, she's just this tiny, relatively tiny woman. But the power and the strategy and just, you know, watching that, it's like it builds. And then you see her finish and it's, what an experience. What a wonderful day.
It was a very, very special day in the history of running, period. And for women runners, it was perhaps the most special day ever.
Now, we are moving ahead again. You worked for Runner's World for a long, long time, and you wrote an article titled White Men Can't Run, about the dominance of African athletes and athletes of African descent in professional athletics. And the article was later republished in the Best American Sports Writing, a highly respected publication recognizing excellent journalism in the sports industry. And so congratulations on that, by the way. What an honor.
Well, thank you. I was very pleased to be nominated for that article. And I'll tell you a little secret. I was very bitter that the magazine article that won the award that year for the best feature article of the year was about, you know, how to go get massages in the Philadelphia suburbs and where to buy fancy body oils and how to go to the spa, things like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But that was typical. And I couldn't help notice, and I was reading the scientific literature because I've always been interested in that. And it was very clear to me then, as it has become more clear ever since then. This was written in 1992, so it was quite a while ago, that the Kenyans and Ethiopians and East Africans were winning most of the distance races, and that the runners of West African descent, let's say Jamaicans like Usain Bolt, were winning most of the sprints. And it was considered a verboten topic by many, but I couldn't see not writing about it when it was so much in the headlines of our sport, the
Absolutely.
Sport of running, every
mm-hmm.
single day.
Mm-hmm.
So I did write about it. And many people appreciated it. I got a few nasty phone calls from people who did not appreciate the title, White Men Can't Run. But by and large, what I described in the article continues to this day. And we don't really know why. The geneticists thought they were going to come up with the answers 10 or 20 years ago, and they haven't. So the reasons are still difficult to figure out. But the results, anytime you watch a race on TV at the Olympics or anywhere else, the results have stayed fairly consistent through the years.
So you actually have gone through a period of time when running was kind of I'm really generalizing here, but it was sort of like a white man's sport, to where women became very competitive in it. Blacks and African American descent became very good at it. And so the whole nature of running competition, the economics of it, those all changed dramatically over your running lifetime.
That is true. It's a very accurate characterization of things that have happened since the mid-60s when I started to today. I will note, I mean, by far the biggest thing that's happened in running is, as they always say about real estate, location, location, location. With running, it's women, women, women. I mean, that's what has changed in the last 50 years. Everything else is far behind that in terms of the magnitude of the change. What's interesting, if you're going to talk about the ethnic issues and the gender, the women are now more than 50% of the sport, of course. Mm-hmm. They've just flooded into the sport for many, many reasons. The ethnicities remain a very, very small, minuscule part of the sport. They just happen to win all the races. But, you know, they're sadly, it would be a wonderful thing if there were more African Americans running distant races in this country and doing more for their health. But for a lot of reasons, that isn't the case at this point. But certainly for women, it is.
And it will be interesting to see what happens in the future. I was just looking at a film, a new film that's coming out, a documentary, local thing. But it was talking about brown girls surf. And and I thought, you know, this is the future. It's like women are getting more involved in actually organizing these events. And of course, we know that with politics, but we're also seeing that in sports and athletics. And Black Girls Run is, of course, something that lots of us know about. So these things are identified with their ethnicity. And I will be following that with great curiosity and interest, and also seeing how sponsorship and economics of it goes, because you would know better than most of us how the marketing plays into that, and we'll see what happens with that in the next few decades.
Well, I hope we're all supporting every effort to get people involved in healthy sport who are not involved in it yet. So I hope that will turn into a big wave.
I'm with you there. And actually, this then brings us to your recently published book called Run Forever. Great title. And what was the impetus for writing this book?
Well, I want to say right off the bat that you can hear the title Run Forever and maybe think that I'm a kook or a nut job or something like that. And of course, I realize that neither I nor anyone else is going to run forever. But I do believe that sort of having a bold and active approach to one's life is important. And that's why the title of the book is a little bit bold. And really, I wrote the book in part because it's the life I'm living as a 71-year-old runner, but also all the years I was at Runner's World, we did many, many editorial surveys of all the readers of the magazine, from the 20-year-olds to the very few 70-year-olds reading the magazine. And 99% of them said their goal was to run forever run for their lifetime, because they realized there were so many different kinds of benefits that come with running. And I don't ever attempt to list them any longer, because I think they're really very, very individual. Some people run have health reasons, physical health. Some people have mental health reasons. Some people have social reasons. Some people have family history reasons. And they're all good. You know, no reason is better or worse than any other reason for being active and fit and running. So I endorse them all and just say, whatever your reason is, really find it and focus on it and use it to keep you moving.
Yeah. Now, the book specifically addresses certain topics, including brain training, nutrition, and training at every age. So give me what is your take on brain training?
Yeah, when I talk about brain training, I'm not talking, as some people do, about thinking in a certain way because it will help you run faster, that you can break through some mental barrier with a certain kind of brain training. I'm talking about the fact that motivation is the key to everything. And when I was young, most runners, when they're young, they believe that running is all about whether or not you have long legs or a big heart or a good cardiovascular system or large lungs or something like that. And it turns out that those things are just very, very minimally important. Mm-hmm. And what's important is your brain.
Right.
And what I mean by that is your motivation.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, running is not an easy activity. It's not like, I don't know, going bowling or playing bridge or any number of a lot of other things. It takes time and effort and sweat and sore muscles, and sometimes your knee hurts and sometimes other things hurt even more. And you can't keep at it unless you have trained your brain with enough motivational techniques and thoughts and mantras and all those things to keep going. So I say, train your brain first and the rest of your body will follow and take care of itself. So that's what I mean when I talk about brain training.
And you elaborate on that in the book. You are a very good writer, by the way. So you've got it's very interesting reading your writing, and it's entertaining as well. The genuine enthusiasm and interest in the subject just comes through on every page.
Well, thank you for that. I certainly the book has a number of different aims, but one of them is rather than being a 1,000-page book that somebody has to get through these long, tough chapters, it's broken down into very short chapters, as you know, of 3 pages each, which each covers a key aspect of running. It's got personal essays about my own experience. It refers to interviews that I've had through the years with various athletes and coaches and physiologists and exercise scientists. And then there's quite a few references to the scientific literature that I've been reading for 40 years, just because I don't know how this happened, because I'm not at heart a scientist, but I've always been interested in the evidence underlying running and exercise and nutrition, as opposed to just people cranking out ridiculous stuff that's not backed by evidence.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I want to also find out from you about nutrition, because I have a feeling that's a compilation of experience and also running at every age. You've been running for almost, 60 years. And so there's a lot of experience there, as well as modifying things. But talk about, in a general way for our listeners, the nutrition and the running at every age, which is also in your book.
Well, of course, those aren't easy to summarize, but I do believe that the best nutrition is the simplest nutrition. And Michael Pollan and many others have said, you know, eat real foods, especially a lot of plant foods, fruit and vegetables, and not very much. We all understand that there's too much processed food out there. There's too much sugar and salt underneath those plastic wrappers. There's too much fat thrown into the food. And it's too easy to eat too much in this country and not exercise enough. And that's why we have this really horrific obesity crisis, which just keeps getting worse and worse, as far as I can tell. So I think things are more effective when they're simple. If you have a simple approach to these problems like nutrition, then I think you're closer to the right path. And it's just it's simpler to have a simple approach to nutrition, to believe.
I love that you're
eat.
Saying the real food thing, because I think, you know, that's pretty simple for people. It's almost like if it's not in a package, you can eat it and it probably is good for you.
Well, you know, when I go to the grocery store now, I see how often I can come home without something that's packaged. And, you know, I'm not 100% successful. I'm not perfect in any aspects of my life, and I don't know anyone else who's perfect either, but it sure feels good to come home with a paper bag, or I bring my canvas bag to the grocery store and come home with real foods and not stuff that's plastic wrapped.
So indeed.
That's one way to have good nutrition, is not bring home plastic wrapped foods from the store, or cans or whatever.
Totally. And also the strategy for running at every age. Go into that a little bit, the different decades.
I think we just have to keep adapting. And I, believe me, I hate being slower. I would much rather be a faster runner right now than I am. I would love to be a competitive 70-year-old runner right now, but I'm not, and that's okay, because I'm still out there enjoying it. I'm doing enough to be fit. I'm doing enough to be able to go the marathon distance. And by the way, this will be my 5th consecutive year or 6th of running at Boston, because
wow.
I was
congratulations.
I was in the 2013 race. I was among the 5,000 who got stopped because of the bombing, and we didn't even know what was going on at the finish line when we were stopped. And at that point, my plan was to finish in 2013 and then to wait 5 years and run it in 2018. Mm-hmm. But of course, since I wasn't able to finish in 2013, and because the entire world wanted to run Boston in 2014 to celebrate a kind of rebirth of everything good at the marathon, I wanted to be one of those, and I went back in 2014 and ran it. Then I figured, what the heck? I might as well just go straight through to 2018. So I've been out there ever since.
And you're going to be there very shortly. And I congratulate you for that. And I know you've been training hard for that. In life's big picture, what has running meant to you up to today? And where do you see it taking you in the future?
Well, running has been such a big part of my life, of course, because it's been something where I won some important races. I had a career at Runner's World, which I never could have expected would happen. When I was running in the 60s, there was no such thing as making a living from running. You couldn't sell shoes, you couldn't sell power bars, you couldn't sell sports drinks or anything. So I've been incredibly lucky to find that I could work in the magazine industry and write books and things like that. So I never imagined that. And now it's just such a part of my life, my friends, my community, mm-hmm. Annual races that I go back to, like the Thanksgiving Day race that I've run 55 years in a row now. It just all keeps me in a kind of a groove. There's always something coming up every couple of months that I look forward to and prepare for and have a special time at, and it just makes it just adds some excitement, adventure, flavor, and spice to life.
And what you've done is you've adapted your running to fit into the phase of your life where you are at whatever point in time that was, and you've made it important but also possible, rather than setting up goals that were unrealistic or things that could not be accomplished. So I really appreciate how you've adapted to the different aspects of your life and how running has always been a part of that, but a different part at different times.
Well, yes. And believe me, when I was young, I was pretty obsessive about my running. And you don't win the Boston Marathon, frankly, unless you are obsessive enough to run 100 miles a week. Wow. But I did learn that there were other ways to live and coexist with running as well. And I've found those ways, and they have worked wonderfully well for me. And I'd like to think I'm a little bit more balanced now than I was when I was 21 years old.
Gotcha. I think that's part of wisdom as well, as that balance and understanding how all of the pieces fit together. Now, I would like to end this segment of the interview with you reading a portion of your book that I found very touching, and I think our readers will also enjoy. And of course, then they get a sense of what the whole book is about, the tone of the book, and we'll be finding out how we can actually purchase your book shortly after this. So if you would read this segment from Run Forever, I would be very appreciative.
Thank you very much, and thank you for working with me to pick out this section. I think it is quite appropriate.
Cool.
So here goes. My high school coach and mentor, John J. Kelly, played a bigger role than all others combined, not because he compiled a lengthy list of running rules, but because he lived true. He taught me that one's actions, philosophy, and guiding principles, the simple, big picture stuff, are far more important than the day-to-day minutiae. I try to remember this lesson every day and to live by it. Certain themes return frequently to Run Forever. That's because they are so central to healthy running. One of these is a practice I call adaptive excellence. I believe we should always aim high, but also appropriate. Today, it takes me 2 hours longer to finish the Boston Marathon than it once did. But I'm still moving along. To everything, there is a season, a time to run fast and a time to run slow and relaxed. But we must continue to pursue excellence, even as we adapt to new circumstances. Other themes. Listen to your body. Less is sometimes more. Hills are good for you. Recovery is a necessary part of peak performance. Run, walk, builds fitness many different ways. Patience and consistency are eternal virtues. In my 20 years as executive editor of Runner's World magazine, we regularly asked readers how long they planned to continue running. The response was always the same. 99% said they wanted to run for the rest of their life. That's my goal, too, and I bet it's also yours. Ultimately, it's the main subject of Run Forever. No one wins every race, but we are the better for engaging. If we sit on the sidelines, we can only wither away. I believe that every run is a new adventure and every mile a gift. I hope Run Forever will make you feel the same. Stay the course. Run long and healthy.
That's terrific. Ambie, thank you for taking this time and sharing with us. Listeners have a chance to check out Ambie's book, Run Forever, for free. Runners Connect is giving away 3 complimentary copies. The contest is free to enter. Just visit runnersconnect.net/FB. That's F as in Frank and B as in boy. That will take you to our private Facebook group. If you are already a member, you'll see the contest pinned to the top. If you're not a member, request access. It's free, and then you'll see the link to the contest. We're about to change gears here and move into the final kick. We'll be back soon after recognizing our sponsors, so stay tuned. Did you just finish a marathon that didn't go so well? Bonked? Faded, cramped, or just couldn't hit your goal? You're not alone. That's why we created this amazing 9-part marathon training video course. In this course, we'll teach you about the physiological demands of the marathon distance, the 3 most critical systems you need to target, specific workouts you should include in your training, how long and what pace your long run should be, show you sample weeks and months of our training program, and help you execute the perfect taper and race strategy. Phew. You don't want to miss this course while it's open. Just head to runnersconnect.net/faster and you can join for free. Ambie, I briefly went over the final kick with you, and we'll elaborate on this just a bit now. It was started by Tina Muir, who was the first host of Run to the Top podcast, and it is a couple of questions that I would like your opinion or your information on, and different version of what we've been talking about today. So what is your favorite local training run? I think you already kind of alluded to us. Tell us enough that our readers could find it if they come to your city, where to park, the name of the starting point, how long they can run, the terrain, safety issues, etc.
Well, you know, I think we alluded to it earlier. We were talking about the John J. Kelly statue. We were talking about the Mystic Pizza Shop across from the statue. Just around the corner from there is one of the great running roads in the country, I believe. And we do a lot of trail running around here. We have some beautiful coastal parks, and they are wonderful. But this road in Mystic, it's called River Road, is just absolutely a fantastic place to run, walk, bike, and it's always got a few people on it. It's fantastic because it goes along the Mystic River, it meanders, it curves, it's got a few little bumps, but no big hills. It has views of the famous Mystic Seaport across the river with famous whaling ships and other wooden boats there. Wow. And it also runs past some very historic old homes of whaling captains on the river. So people, Mystic is a little tourist town. Parking is not easy, but you only have to drive around for a couple of minutes before you can find a place to park in Mystic. And then if you just head north on River Road, the most frequent run is about 5.5 miles out to Old Mystic and then back. But we do 20 milers there also because you can just keep on going and run forever. And it is a lovely, lovely run.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. That sounds terrific. This has been one of my favorite parts of hosting this Run to the Top podcast, because I'm learning all these great places around the world to do some runs. It's really been fantastic. Now, the next question is a recommended running book. I'm guessing that Run Forever might be kind of at the top of your list right now. So I think we'll actually skip by that because you are going to have a chance to tell us how we can find your book, purchase it, and also possibly win in the drawing. But the next one is something that I'd love you to elaborate on, and it's a quote that you said, and it's called, "Motivation is a skill. It can be learned and practiced." And what do you mean by this?
Well, again, we've been talking about that, the fact that I think brain training for motivation is the most important skill that a runner can have. And one of the ways that I think works very, very well, and it's an idea I haven't heard before, but I introduced into the book, Run Forever, is that people should write their own story as a very brief runner's credo. And that's kind of a, this I believe about myself and my running statement. And I think we should all have one of those to refer to frequently, because somewhere in that runner's credo, you will have to explain what you do when things get tough and how you fight back and what you do when you're injured and what you do when life throws obstacles at you. And nobody escapes the hurls and the obstacles that come from life. We all have to deal with not just one thing, but many things. Totally. And so I think write your own story. It can be quite short. I wrote one about 3 or 4 paragraphs long, kind of for myself. I kind of think I tried to masquerade it, but people can borrow from it and write their own. And it can be a very strong motivational script to follow. I believe people should have it on their refrigerator or near their bed or place that they'll see it often.
Nice. Okay, so is there a person or subject about running that you would like to listen to in a future podcast on Run to the Top?
Well, I don't know every person who has been on Run to the Top for sure, but when you were talking about favorite books or books I recommend, I figured it was not fair to recommend one's own. But another new book by my friend Alex Hutchinson, a book called Endure, is absolutely fantastic and one of the best running and endurance books that has ever been written,
Nice. Period.
And it's very readable. And I also believe that Pete McGill is a very, very smart, thoughtful, talented writer who's done a couple of good running books. And I interviewed him at a runner's seminar 3 or 4 years ago, and he had the most insightful and coherent comments I've ever heard from someone in a live seminar.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for both of those suggestions. Now, do you have any questions for me before we wrap up?
I don't think I do, Stephanie. Thank you.
We've had a lot of fun talking both during this interview, but also before. And, you know, thank you for all of the time that you've taken. Now is your chance. And please give us as much contact information and how our audience can stay in touch with you and purchase your newly released book, Run Forever.
Well, the new book, Run Forever, is, of course, available at bookstores everywhere, as they say, online and retail stores in your own community. I haven't put it on my website yet, but I probably will very shortly. That's ambieburfoot.com, and you could write to me there and get an autographed copy of it that I can send out to you.
Yay.
And otherwise, my information, my email and everything is highly discoverable on the internet, and everything is very clearly laid out at ambieburfoot.com.
Awesome. And I want to thank each of you for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. Don't forget to check in at the Runners Connect Winner Circle on Facebook at runnersconnect.net/F. B. In addition to notifying you directly by email if you're a winner, we also post the winners for our drawings there. Subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, and more. Ambie Burfoot, thank you so much for speaking with us today. Best of luck with your new book, Run Forever, and your upcoming race in Boston.
Well, thank you so much, Stephanie. I really appreciate the time and effort you put into preparing for our chat today, and it's been a lot of fun.
And thank you, our listeners, especially. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top. Goodbye.
Hi, this is Stephanie again, inviting you to participate in our bonus episode about your experience at the Boston Marathon from this year or any other year. Let's celebrate the running of Boston. Call in to our Boston Marathon Experience phone message line at runnersconnect.net/share and record your favorite one or two experiences from the race. Runners Connect will pick the best out of these and create a bonus episode for the Run to the Top podcast just about Boston. Head on over to runnersconnect.net/share and share your story. We'd love to hear it.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.